From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
This morning, we open up the entire show to talk about the big picture and the role of arts and culture in our community. We speak with Jocelyn Scudder, the executive director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council, on the state of the arts in Park City. And she's joined by a couple of colleagues, Kendall Kelly, the marketing and community engagement manager at the Arts Council, Emma Brake, the events and accessibility manager for Create PC, and Andrea Zavala, who is in charge of the Latino Arts Festival coming up June 13th to 15th. All a big conversation, big picture, arts in our community. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Art matters. It brings beauty, energy, connection, and delight to both individuals and communities. And today, we're going to get a bit of an update on all the wonderful things happening in Summit County and Park City from Jocelyn Scudder, Executive Director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. And friends, thank you for being here today.
Thanks so much for having us.
You're welcome. Well, let's start out. There are a couple interesting things that are happening to discuss the state of the arts in Park City and Summit County. And it started a while ago with Project ABC, which I was actually a part of. Would you explain to our listeners a little bit about what Project ABC was and how it's evolved into its newest?
Yes, absolutely. And thanks for bringing that up. Project ABC actually started right when I joined the Arts Council. And I guess maybe to set the stage and to zoom out a little bit. So the Arts Council, there's arts councils that exist all throughout the nation. Most cities, municipalities, counties have arts councils, and they exist in a lot of different forms. Sometimes they are part of local government. Sometimes, like for example, the Salt Lake City Arts Council, they're a hybrid organization. They have a 501c3, and they're also city staff. We are unique. We are an independent nonprofit arts council, and we've been around since 1986. And one of the main reasons we exist is because there actually isn't an arts department at either the city or the county level. And so our role is really to fill that gap, making sure that for like things with Project ABC, that was a long-range planning document. We're planning for the future of arts and culture. How do we want to see cultural facilities prioritized? How do we want to see funding prioritized for the arts? No one was doing that work. That's why it's really important that an arts council exists. It's important to have strong and healthy arts councils in your communities so that organizations and professionals can be thinking about this work. Our mission is to serve our arts and culture community by driving creative programming, providing valuable resources, and cultivating connections. But really big picture, you know, if we did our work perfectly, all nonprofits have a vision statement, and we envision a community where arts and culture is considered critical in our community. We envision a community where creatives can thrive. This is a tough one with the cost of living here, and being an artist here can be challenging, but it is in our vision. One day. And we also have a vision where all people can connect through the arts. You know, your tagline on the show is promoting a healthy living. Did I get that right? And arts, as you said, it's so important to the social fabric of our communities. It's a backbone for social cohesion, for connection, for creating dialogue. You know, it provides shared creative experiences for us to gather as a community. And so we know that there are massive social benefits to prioritizing arts, and it's really important to the quality of life as residents and as visitors that come here. So we started in 2017. It's actually what attracted me to the Arts Council. My predecessor, Hadley Dynack, started a long-range planning process called Project ABC. It was one of the first times that a long-range plan for arts and culture had been done. It was actually spurred. Randy Barton was really at the helm. Many of you know Randy, who's executive director over at the Egyptian Theater. And many of the leaders of the cultural organizations locally said, we need a plan. We need to be thinking about the future of arts and culture. Arts Council was the appropriate organization to really shepherd that forward. And so in 2018, we published a plan that was community-owned and community-driven. So it wasn't the Arts Council's plan. It was kind of this big plan for a lot of stakeholders. So local government, nonprofits, local businesses could help execute. Since then and now, we've had a global pandemic that shattered and really rattled the arts and culture sector. There were really specific industry pain points that the cultural sector dealt with, envisioning how we gather people safely, how we fundraise, right? Because it was really challenging to fundraise really during that time. We couldn't really program. No one could operate during COVID because it wasn't safe to, right? We are steeped in this opportunity to like I said, gather people through shared creative experience, and we couldn't do that. And so with COVID-19 happening and with this quickly changing world, we knew that we needed to update the plan. And so we've actually worked with many community stakeholders and were thankfully funded by both Park City, Summit County, and actually the Chamber of Commerce to do a new arts and culture master plan for Park City and Summit County. We've been doing this for the past year, working with a really amazing consultant, Designing Local out of Columbus, Ohio.
And so what is the difference between what was established with Project ABC and this new plan?
We are talking about it as a deepening of the plan, right? Some of the strategies and collective priorities that were in Project ABC may still be relevant. It was really important to affirm that or you know, figure out if some of them were not relevant anymore. And we're seeing a lot of really interesting topics come to the surface. We're also seeing a refinement of collective priorities. Project ABC ended up with 7 collective priorities to execute on. And actually, I think we're going to be able to narrow down to 3 main priorities with this new plan. It's going to really help us focus on some of these strategies. Some of the things that are percolating are the need for cultural facilities that has not gone away, and that was a big talking point back in 2018. The need for the arts in the everyday, making sure that it's woven consistently in the way of life as residents, easily accessible, programming, et cetera, and also prioritizing funding. You know, arts hasn't had a new funding resource since RAP tax, which we as the Arts Council helped shepherd forward in 2000. So it's been 25 years since the arts had a new funding resource. We're also seeing a lot of funding cut for the arts recently. So super important.
And I have one question. What do you think happens when there isn't a cultural master plan, an arts and culture master plan? What's the downside of not thinking ahead?
I think it creates a disjointed community, right? This is an opportunity to unify our sector, to create common language, to make sure that, you know, we have 20 plus cultural organizations that exist in this town doing amazing work. Mm-hmm. The Egyptian Theater, Mountain Town Music, Park City Performing Arts, Park City Film, the Kimball Arts Center, right? All the museums that exist. Making sure that we are unified as one voice as a cultural sector, because we all provide art in a certain way, but in very different ways. Making sure that we're talking, communicating, planning with each other, collaborating as much as possible to strengthen our sector is really important. And I think without a plan, organizations can get siloed. And so we are a much stronger community together.
I would love to bring in Kendall Kelly into the conversation. Kendall, you're the marketing and community engagement manager for the Arts Council. And I want to go a little deeper into this whole question of what happens to a community when there's not access to art, to culture, to music, when this isn't a priority. And I just want to preface it by saying I remember years ago sitting in the city council chambers and having Randy Barton come in and giving these really passionate little speeches, I guess, about art and the importance. Mm-hmm. And knowing that this community, you know, yeah, we're a ski resort town, but guess what? You can't just be a ski resort town because people's souls need more than skiing. Can you comment on that?
Absolutely, and I'd even say that it spans to a person who maybe doesn't participate in those activities, or even people that do participate in those activities and still would like to have more fulfillment or things that are, you know, spanning the gap of what brings them enjoyment in life. And so I think that having arts and culture in a community is just as critical as having outdoor recreation. And those things are important for your mental health. They're important for your overall just enjoyment and what you're going to be doing on a regular basis. I think it fills voids, and it helps us to maybe pull away from being on phones or screens or things along those lines just as much as an outdoor activity does. And so I think when you're coming to a community, not everyone is going to participate in the outdoor activities that so many of us love. I know I appreciate them, but I also think that you want to find other things to fulfill your everyday just things that you're doing, but also maybe as a visitor who's coming to the community who doesn't participate in those activities. They want to be able to find a gallery to go and stroll. They want to be able to have an arts and craft activity for them and their kids to be able to participate in. And there's just so much more that you're going to be able to get out of these music and arts that maybe you wouldn't be getting from an outdoor and or physical activity. And I think that that is a very important aspect of arts and culture being in Park City.
Yeah. And so as you do your outreach to the community, what do you find that people want more of? And I guess it just depends on the person. You know, when I ride my bicycle, because okay, I'm very athletic oriented, down the bike path down past City Park, I love looking at the art, the sculptures that line the pathway, and it makes me feel like I'm part of this community that's just right somehow. You know, and if the art wasn't there, I don't know what I would feel. I would feel empty somehow.
I think a lot of times we don't even realize it's there. So you're riding your bike and those features, murals, or you drive ride under the bridges, and they're just there and you get to inherently enjoy them. But you're not thinking of that as something that needs to be critically brought into the community. And it does. It's something that people are thinking about. It's something that a person is saying, let's have these fun, interactive, musical art sculptures in the area so that then when you're riding your bike, you can stop and interact with it. And it brings something more to what you're doing on that ride or when you're on a walk. And I think it's something that people need to think more about, the fact that this is thought through. There are people out there who are actually trying to bring that to the area and the community. And I agree with you as far as just that those are items that maybe you're seeking out on just in addition to your bike ride, but there are other people that are seeking them out on a regular basis. And your initial question was, what are people seeking the most? What is it that we're hearing that people are looking for in our community outreach and in talking with the community? And it is this kind of central hub. It's this place that people can come and gather. And I often think about Harthen Hill and his Brooks Kirchheimer's main goal with his restaurant was a gathering place. And I think that that's something that we're hearing consistently, is that people would love to have this one focal point that they're able to experience a lot of different areas of the arts. It could be actual physical art. It could be music. It could be something they're able to participate in. It just has this span of maybe it's dancing and being able to take classes. Maybe it's being able to take art classes. But something that they all know, if we all go to this one place, there's going to be this aspect of, it's kind of like all going to the ski area. Your friends are going to be there. Your community is going to be there. And we need to have that fulfillment somewhere else as well.
And art is amazing because it's both intensely personal and it's also very communal. And that connection point between the internal and the external is so incredibly valuable. And it's across all ages. Are there different kinds of things you're doing to reach out to visitors and locals of different age groups?
I think it's important to know that the Arts Council is meant to be a hub to help support all of these other entities who are actually doing a lot of that work and reaching a lot of different areas of the community. So the Arts Council does have our own programs that we really focus in on to try and help provide support to different arts members and communities. And so one of those aspects is Create PC, Local Artist Collective. I won't dive into that just yet, but it's good to know that we're here to help say, okay, this is a gap that we want to see fulfilled, but then we also really want to show up and support Park City Film, Ballet West, Egyptian Theater, Kimball Arts Center, and say these are activities and things that they have going on and how you're able to participate in that. We have an events calendar on our website. We work really hard on our social and digital media to be able to promote those different communities and what they have going on for both the locals and people that are visiting. One thing that's important to also know that we're working hard on is communicating to visitors and communities outside of Park City to say, hey, this is a hub that you could come to, and here are the things that you'd be able to participate in if you did come.
Well, I know that my family all are on your mailing list, and we love the updates. We get, is it once or twice a month? It feels like it's twice, right? And those are incredibly detailed and wonderful resources, not only for the art lover, but also for the artists themselves. There are a lot of things about grants and opportunities and RFPs. And if you're not on this newsletter, can you share with our listeners how they should get on? Because I really recommend it.
Absolutely. So we do have two different newsletters. Excuse me. There is one that goes at the beginning of the month that is our arts and culture events and happenings, that's more community-wide and meant for everyone that would want to know what's happening in the area. And then the second newsletter is our Create newsletter, which is meant more so for artists who would be looking for opportunities, like you're saying, with the grants and different positions or just places that they would be able to provide their artwork to the community. And the place that you can go to sign up for those is our website, pcsearts.org. Our homepage, if you scroll to the bottom, there's going to be the spot to be able to sign up for all those.
Great, thank you.
I have to say, I was pre-recording an interview with a journalist in London this morning, and we said, oh, we're in Park City, Utah. And he said, oh, wow, I love Park City. I am really hoping to get there for the Sundance Film Festival. Oh. And his brother had been for the last couple of years. And I just felt this palpable, like, wah, wah. It's leaving with us with a gap. And I'm going to say, even if you're not the person that fully embraces Sundance every year, just knowing it was here was a big part of arts and culture. And so, Jocelyn.
Yes, of Sundance. It is the hot topic of this community, of the state. And I want to be clear, you know, Sundance is still going to be here next year. And, you know, I think we should savor it in its last year in Utah, because you're right. It's a fantastic asset and festival for our community. It sparks, conversation. It's piloted some of the most amazing films that we've all seen. And it's a unique festival in this state because of the types of dialogue that it sparks. And it will leave a massive cultural void. It'll also leave an economic void, right? I mean, the economic benefit of that festival was massive. And it was a 40-year legacy. I'm personally extremely disappointed to see it go. I know many locals felt maybe that it didn't represent Park City anymore, the way it had grown. You know, it was so many people from LA coming here. But in the end, it's going to be a massive loss, both, you know, socially, culturally, economically for our community. We met with our sector, so cultural organizations, soon after, and chatted about, you know, what does the next chapter look like, right? Like, we must move forward. We must think sustainably about, you know, and I know there's a lot of conversations about what do we bring in to replace it. But I'm not, you know, and I know that's even happening at the state level, right? I mean, there are people thinking about what goes in place of Sundance. But I think it underscores the need, first and foremost, for a cultural plan, which, mm-hmm. So it's deepening and justifying the work that we are doing as an arts council to plan for the future of arts and culture. It also makes me think about, you know, re-envisioning if we're going to talk economy, re-envisioning about how we think about arts impact. Arts impact is massive in this community. We did a study called AEP6, Arts and Economic Prosperity Study. It's a national study with Americans for the Arts. this study was actually intentionally done. We worked with a data strategist in Washington, D.C. on this, and they said, you know what? Let's leave Sundance out of this study because it inflates your numbers. They also have a really sound methodology, but it studies different types of numbers, right? So an inconsistent methodology and a really reliable methodology that we didn't want to contest. So we have numbers that actually measure the impact of arts and culture in the community without Sundance, which I'm really glad we made that decision, because now, of course, if we hadn't made that decision, this study would be moot and all of that work would not be relevant. 176 million in economic activity in 1 year. This is provided only, now this is the catch. We only studied arts and culture nonprofits and nonprofit events, right? So we asked, we did 800 individual intercept surveys, our team. You can imagine, we actually hated this study. It was terrible. But it was a lot of work, and we're so glad that we have this data now. So we were asking people about, you know, when you attend a concert for Mountain Town Music, did you spend money on a babysitter? Did you go to the grocery store and buy picnic things? Did you spend money on gas? Did you
buy
a staycation?
New sundress.
Exactly. Like, what is your economic spending habits? And we were able to, through that data and through the methodology at in DC, Americans for the Arts, and this was a study conducted nationwide. All 50 states participated. We were able to see that with our population cohort, we were far and beyond the economic impact of other communities our size. 176 million in economic activity, 6.6 million contributed to local tax revenues, right? That's at the city and county level. The average spending of a cultural visitor, someone who's going to a concert, $84 per person. The national average is $38 per person. So people who come to cultural events spend money. They're putting money back into our cultural economy. So, and these, again, so we started talking about Sundance here, right? So these are people who are contributing to the economy. Again, we have 20 local arts organizations that provide year-round programming. The Kimball Arts Center, Mountain Town Music, Egyptian Theater, Park City Film, to just name a few. And I think we need to be thinking about, how do we make our 12-month year-round programming more robust? How do we make sure that these organizations have stable facilities, right? Mm-hmm. If you think about, like, the Kimball Arts Center has been in limbo about their building for years. The Arts Council, we're looking for a permanent brick and mortar for our KRPC Local Artists Collective. You know, luckily, Park City Film is in the Jim Santee and has a great partnership with Park City Film, and that library is a great cultural asset. But when you compare us to our, let's say, arts and culture competitors, let's look at Breckenridge, also another
amazing
ski town, right? And you talk about resort communities, arts benefits resort communities, because when people are making decisions to travel, they want to go somewhere with cultural assets. They want to go somewhere that has it all. They want to go somewhere mm-hmm. to ski, and then, I get to go see a show that evening. So cool. I get to go to a local artist collective or to an amazing gallery. This drives decision-making when people book travel. Arts supports ski industry, and I will shout that from the rooftops as far as I can go. And so as we can think about our next chapter without Sundance, unfortunately, I think we focus on 12-month, strengthening our programming 12 months out of the year instead of focusing on this kind of event-based industry. You know, there was so much impact with this 10-day festival. And I know that caused a lot of friction with our community. And so if that's the case, right, like, how do we think about building really amazing facilities that spread the programming out 12 months out of the year and creates more impact but more sustainably?
Let's bring Emma Brake into the conversation. Emma is the Events and Accessibility Manager and runs Create PC, which we've been talking about. And you can just bring that microphone up to your For those who don't know what Create PC is, tell us about it.
Sure. Thank you for having us all in today. It's very rare that the Arts Council gets to talk about all of the little things that we do as a whole. But I am the Events and Accessibility Manager, and part of my role is to manage that Create PC creative marketplace. It's a combination co-op of a gallery on the first floor and then studio spaces on the second. So we support about between 30 and 40 artists at any given time, with a rotation of shows and exhibits. It features our more well-known holiday makers market through November and December, and then supports 10 studio artists who have the space to make and create in the upstairs space.
Mm, nice. And as Jocelyn was saying, your home base has been, well, it hasn't been a home base. It's been jumping around to whichever vacant building will have you, right?
That's true. This is a program we've been running since, I think, 2018 or 19. But speaking of Sundance, that a vibrancy order has used to provide us these spaces on Main Street. So we've been lucky enough to although we were bouncing around to temporary spaces, we had some cool options to be right on Main Street, and the success of the program came from that. But now we have a semi-permanent home at 1500 Currents Boulevard.
And tell people where that is, because it's a little tucked away.
It is. It's right off of Kearns Boulevard, but hard to find
if you don't know where you're going, but it's right behind Tupelo, behind Wells Fargo. It does have parking. Once you locate it, it's easy to access. You'll see yellow signage everywhere.
And they have the best parties. So if you're on that list and you see that there's an opening at Create PC, my husband, Mark Baziars, he shows art there. My son, Scout, has occasionally worked there. And so this is a big part of our lives. And I love it. And I love the artist space. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about and how people are able to get those spaces? What do they do?
Yeah, I think the program started before my time with the Arts Council, but it really came, as Jocelyn mentioned, as a gap that needed filling. We were hearing from local artists that representation in galleries on Main Street was extremely difficult and inaccessible to them. So we created this sort of co-op model where they invest a little in us and running the program, but they're able to exhibit their artwork and sell it to locals and visitors alike. We rotate the shows about 3 times a year, so there'll be open calls for those. There's actually one coming out tomorrow. So representing, we've sort of done a model of a few months at a time, so this newest call will be to exhibit artwork from June till about November.
Right, it keeps it fresh.
And an opening launch party for all of those.
And then the upstairs, the workspaces are terrific. It's such a vibrant area. Can you share a little bit about how that works and what the access is like and what the cost is like and if you have any availability?
Sure. We do. The upstairs is a sort of an open space. It's not exactly private studios, but it's sectioned off with some shared work tables in the middle, about 10 by 10 studio spaces, 10 of those. They're all filled at the moment, but those come available every once in a while. It seems like when people are in there, their creative juices start flowing, and it's really worked out for most people. But we will post those on the website if anything does come available. But it's about $350 a month to participate, and that does include the exhibition space in the gallery downstairs. Okay. So those 10 studio members are always represented no matter how the show rotates, and they have 24-hour access. Some of them work together, play music, get creative inspiration from each other. Sometimes people have private times and close the curtain and just create.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Let's bring in Andrea Zavala.
Yay.
Who is our community inclusion and outreach coordinator and also runs the Latino Arts Festival, which has seems like it started about 7 years ago, maybe?
And this will be our ninth.
Mm. Wow. And has expanded to several days. It will be June 13th to 15th. But Andrea, I wanted to start off first with talking about the Latino community, how rich it is in art and music, and how much we need to feel that expression here in this community.
Well, that's one. Sorry for my voice. This is not how I normally sound. But that's one of the reasons why I started doing this, right? Because I come from Ecuador, and I always loved my culture. I always loved our music, our art, our traditions. And when I started having kids, I realized they were not getting in touch with that so much unless I took them back to my country or my husband's country, which is Brazil. And so I start thinking, how can I make that possible? And then the opportunity to work with the Arts Council and the Latino Arts Fest came through, and I was like, this is perfect, because, you know, we're so rich. Many countries from South America, Central America, Mexico have so much, and we're so different also. So people normally will think that, you know, you're Latinos and pretty much put us all in the same bag and you're all eating tacos and, I don't know, spicy. And it's not really like that, right? Even our neighbors from Colombia and Peru are really different from what we do. The way we talk is different. The music that we listen to is different. Our weather is different. So how can we showcase that rich culture that we have in our countries here, where we're living now and building a family, right? And so, yeah, that's what we...
And so it seems to me that we typically say that our community is made up of about 25% Latino. Is that still... That's somewhere still, around a decent estimate?
I think that's a decent estimate. Might be more, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the most recent census clocks it at more like 20. And then you probably have undocumented people that also exist that probably boosts it up to 25.
Right, right. And so I would imagine that every country in Latin America is represented. And we know some countries are represented more than others. But... you know, if you talk about the Peruvian community here in Park City, for example, I mean, I just think of the music and the art. I mean, every country you go to in Latin America just has such a rich culture. How do you draw this out? Say, someone who is from Peru.
How do we bring them
here?
How
would you find them? How do you draw them out, too? that's your job, right?
That's my job. Yeah, so it's a lot of outreach. Especially at the beginning, getting to know the dancers, getting to know the artists. And so right now I've been seeing more of them sending me information. Andrea, there is this cool mariachi band that you should have at the festival. Andrea, there is this food truck that you might want to have it. Mm. So now it's a lot of actually their community telling me things that they like, that they might like to see at the festival. Folklore, bands, artists. So I think now we're in a place where they know about the festival and how much fun it is that they want to participate. And so I'm not saying that my work got easier, but now I have to curate it a little further, right? So we make sure that the food that we provide, it's actually authentic, that it's made by Peruvian people, that it's made by Mexican people that really know about the taste of that food, right? That it's not made from someone that is just having a restaurant that sells Mexican food, right? This is actually made by a family that opened the first food truck on State Street. That's Don Rafa, the food truck that we have at the festival. And the same with other the food trucks, the same with the artists, the same with the performances.
And you have so many artists. Aren't there over 40?
We're going to have over 40. So we were doing between 25 and 30 artists for the last few years. And then because we have this flux of people asking to participate, we expanded it with this activation that we're having this year, which is El Mercadito, that emulates what El Mercado that you see in South America will normally be, right? Very vibrant, very colorful, with lots of pre-baked foods and fresh foods that I don't think we can have here, but right, we're going to just emulate it. We're going to have kids activities. So this gave the opportunity for more applicants to participate during the festival. So right now we're going to have over 40 of them between visual artists and El Mercadito participants.
And it's so, it just looks so vibrant. So much happening, music and dance and food, and it's going to be a feast for the senses. Tell our listeners where it takes place and how much it costs.
The festival will be June 13, 14, and 15 at Canyons Village at Park City Mountain. It's actually a free event. You just need to come ready to buy art and things and the food and all the fun things and come ready to spend the entire day there. I always say the 3 days because every day is different. On Friday, we've activated for you to have an experience from Brazil. So everything that we're doing on that day will be Brazilian oriented. On Saturday, it's more like a community fiesta. We're having folklore from different countries. We're having groups that are new, like Vallenato. I don't think we've ever seen that group here. It's from Colombia. We're also having pop rock. And then on Sunday, because it falls during Father's Day, we're making sure that families feel attracted to come and spend the day there. We're going to have mariachis and more kids activities, and we're actually partnering with Park City Soccer Club to do a contest for juggling the ball because we know our community loves soccer.
And this isn't just for Latino folks. This is for everyone,
this is for
right?
everyone. And I think the other day someone was asking me, like, the percentage of people that come, and we've seen, like, a good percentage of Latinos that enjoy the festival, but we also see it about the people that were not born in South America and Central America because they want to see this. They are attracted to the culture. They've traveled, right? They've been there. And so they want to have a more taste of what they experienced when they were there. And if they were not, they want to see what it is about.
Okay, here's a question. Hammocks. Will there be? I love, for some reason, when I'm in Latin America, shopping for hammocks. Because they're so beautiful.
I know.
And they're so, I mean, they're so meticulously done.
I will tell you something. At least in Ecuador, we all have a hammock in our rooms.
You do?
It's not even like an outdoor thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's going to have hammocks. I own a little shop, and I used to have hammocks because I know how people love them because they're fresh and they're light, and you can just hang them everywhere. I have three at home. If you need one, I'll give you.
I always love the familial ones, you know, where, like, the whole family's supposed to sleep
huge.
In one. Yeah,
they
they're huge.
For three people, but they're huge. Yeah.
And some of the kids now, they'll go hammocking, where they'll take a little, like, portable hammock and go up to Blood's Lake or somewhere and just hang it out. And I was like, this is wonderful. We need more of it.
And we will have some textile artists who may be selling some of those if you're interested.
Yeah.
But Mary Beth, I think you touched on something really important because, again, like, I think the majority, we have about 10,000 people come through this festival over the 3 days. It's grown substantially since, I think, in 2016 it started on Library Field, and it was maybe 1,000 people came through.
I remember.
And so it's really exploded, and I think it showcases the interest and the support that this community has for the Latino community. But art serves, you know, it illustrates the human experience, right? It provides an opportunity for you to talk to someone that has kind of visually manifested an idea into a creative object. And that bridges connections. It fosters understanding. It provides connection points and dialogue. And it unifies our community, right? And so while the majority of our attendees do end up being Latino multi-generational families, and it's been great, they bring chairs throughout the day and just stay all day. But I think for people who are not Latino, this is an opportunity to meet, to learn, and to talk to people who are different from you, because in the end, that unifies our community.
And sometimes during regular life, you feel a little hesitant to ask certain questions. You don't want to come off as insensitive or like, is this stupid that I don't know this or whatever. And so what a great opportunity to learn in a supportive environment, right? Just by being with people and having fun together and enjoying life.
Right, it's a massive celebration.
It is. I think one of my experiences, at least, I came here as a J1 student, and so the first time I experienced that was working at the restaurants and meeting people from Colombia, from Peru, from Brazil. We're not exposed to that back home. And so I see the Latino Arts Festival kind of like this experience where you're going to be able to talk to a lot of people from different places, from different backgrounds, from different cultures, and learn more about what we do, because we are kind of the same, but we're also different.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it sounds great. June 13th, 14th, 15th, again at Canyons Village. It's a free event. Come, be ready to eat, be ready to buy art.
Spend those cultural arts dollars.
Yes.
And be ready to listen to some great music. Jocelyn, I wanted to ask you, you know, it's funny in this town of there's so much competition, you know, the longest shot ski and the, you know, whatever it is among different mountain towns. And, you know, every year we have the city tour, and I'm sure you've been on a lot of those and you have seen what other communities do. And you mentioned Breckenridge. And I always think, when I think of art, I oftentimes think of Aspen. I was there a couple of years ago. After doing a big hike from Crested Butte, which was the highlight, but really, at the end of the day, the highlight for me was going to the John Denver Memorial Park. It was amazing. And so art there, it really impacted me, and it, you know, fed my soul. Can you sort of size us up how we compare to other towns of our size, other mountain towns, and, you know, what you've learned that we'd like to bring here?
Yeah, and I think you touch on a really important point. So you brought up City Tour, right? And when our community, our leadership class, gets to go and experience that, and city leaders, nonprofit leaders get to go, it's so fun, not only when I get to go, but let's say I don't go, people will email me right when they get back and say, Jocelyn, I saw the coolest mural project series. You need to look into this really cool thing in Fort Collins or up in Ketchum, Idaho, right? And so there's always this take takeaway of how arts impacted someone's visit. And I think what it does, it strengthens the identity and character of a sense of place, right? And that is so important for the integrity of a town, right? You know, you think about, when people think about Park City, they think about our historic Main Street. You know, the architectural structures, right? Even just that Old Town Saloon, Western feel, it's such a big part of our community character, the moose and the sculptures that you see all around town. Even though the public art program at Park City wrapped all the power boxes with artwork, right? These are all identity-defining characteristics that help people think about, you know, I want to travel there or I want to live there, right? Because they prioritize a really heightened sense of place. Art is used as a tool to do that. And, you know, I mean, it's hard to say how we shape up to other towns, right? I mean, because also sometimes it's apples and oranges. We have done a lot of studies, right? I just brought up the AEP6 study that was nationwide. Unfortunately, not as many ski towns, right? Breckenridge didn't participate in it. Aspen didn't participate in it. I really wanted them to. Yeah. Participated in past ones. Crested Butte, I think, participated in a past study. So we weren't able to compare ourselves directly to some of those maybe like more obvious towns that we commonly compare ourselves to. I know Flagstaff was on that study, and we did, we were up in, you know, kind of the economic activity of somewhere like Flagstaff, comparing populations to somewhere like Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is known as a cultural destination. We were right up there with the types of economic activity that was taking place mm-hmm. in Santa Fe. What what I want to recognize there is that was a nonprofit study. So I think what we learned is nonprofits are killing it. Mm-hmm. Local nonprofits who are working in the arts are really holding up the sector. You know, but we're doing a lot of different other types of studies. We actually just did a study with the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute at the University of Utah that kind of studies different metrics, GDP, right? For-profit entities like the Big Deer Valley concerts and, you know, other. We weren't able to measure the metrics of the galleries because they're a for-profit entity. And the data we're getting back is really different. And so we're digging into that. We're going to have a lot more information. Part of the arts and culture master planning process. There's a big economic impact study that's happening. We're working with JS Associates with that. And we're doing benchmarking. So we're looking at communities like Jackson Hole, like Breckenridge, like Aspen, to see how we compare. And also to look at those communities to say, what are they doing that's successful, right? Do they have an innovative funding mechanism, right? Like maybe we right now, we have wrap tax, right? So there's a sales and use tax. We get a penny on every $10 spent goes into a municipal or a Summit County coffer that gets distributed to recreation and arts every year, right? That was the really innovative model because it doesn't really tax locals. It's mainly taxing visitors who are spending money on goods, right? And so we get to benefit from our tourism, and then that supports arts organizations. What other policies exist like that we could innovate and put in here to strengthen our arts economy? You know, how do we work with our local governments? How do we work with our local chamber to, again, innovate some solutions and some ideas to strengthen our sector? So I think that's one of the main benefits of this city tour, looking at other communities to see, okay, they've got this really cool, you know, their city council has this really cool grants program. How do they fund it? Who runs it? Who administers it? So it's been a really fruitful exercise for us to go through, to look at these other communities and to study this. And we're going to have that information by the summer. We're aiming to complete the Arts and Culture Master Plan by late summer. I'll be going to the city and the county to present those findings, and we'll have a lot more data to share then.
It's funny because the city purchased the land so long ago in 2017 for the quote-unquote Arts and Culture District. We've been calling it that for so long. And I think maybe you should give an update. That has pretty much died in the water. And what is it an area that, for those people who haven't been following along, is it going to be highlighting arts and culture?
Yeah, and I guess I want to be clear, you know, this is a city project, and this, I think it was first started with Jack Thomas, who came up with an idea, a couple mayors ago, who wanted to see an arts and culture district in Park City. Of course, as an arts council and a local arts leader, we loved that idea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then the concept kind of died. It got really expensive, but it was during COVID-19. It was during 2020. I think everyone was really reactionary. This was a tough time to move anything forward. We also had transition in leadership at this time. And so the city is now moving forward with what's now called the 5-acre Bonanza Parcel. And
so
they're
sexy,
moving.
Such a great
I know.
Name.
And they have moved away from, let's say, the branding of quote unquote an arts and culture district. You know, I'm a proponent of an arts and culture district, something that I wasn't necessarily a huge fan of was calling that one hub a district, mm-hmm. right? Because it's a 5-acre parcel. It's a small parcel when you think about it. I guess in Park City, it's a little bit large. But when I think about our arts and culture district, while it's not defined, it spans from the top of Main Street with all of these amazing eateries, you know, the museum on Main Street, down to the library, down to Miners Hospital.
Out to Wooden Shoe Park in PO. It's all over.
Then it would weave in this 5-acre parcel, and then even over to Eccles Theater. That's the arts and culture corridor that has historic character, that has the library, Park City Film, Egyptian Theater, hopefully the Kimball Arts Center. I know that, I'm not on the inner workings of this project. I am on the outside. But as far as I know, there's been really positive conversations about keeping the Kimball Arts Center in 84060, working with the city and in that parcel of land. And I know City Council has been prioritized to keep arts and culture woven through that district. While it might not be the core focus anymore, I think there's a much bigger focus on affordable housing, and we'll see how that, you know, again, they put out an RFP for developers to come up with new concepts about how to develop that land, and we'll see, right? I mean, it's kind of had a lot of stop and goes, and I know it's been a challenge for the city, and the Arts Council just wants to support to, you know, ensure that cultural facilities are prioritized in that area, that public art is prioritized in that area. You know, it was interesting. We did a focus group with Park City High School students when we were in the middle of this arts and culture master planning process. And so we had 20 students in high school, and they were all saying, they were like, we just want a place that we can go. We don't have to spend any money, but we want to hang out, and there's cool stuff to do. And they were describing a third place. They were describing mm-hmm. a need for these shared creative experiences where they could go and gather safely and be in community with each other. And I just kept thinking about the Bonanza Parcel as mm-hmm. a place where, you know, if that is done well, the walking distance from the high school and just how central it is to the community, how it's connected to the rail trail right there and the Poison Creek Trail. I mean, there's so much potential. And I do think that art is a powerful tool for gathering. And so if you root art as something that is woven through that district, it will attract these gathering opportunities. And so anyways, of course, you know, again, as a cultural leader, I hope that art continues to be prioritized in that parcel. But I know that, you know, developing anything in a municipal government is really challenging. And there's a lot of opinions and, you know, you're spending government and tax dollars on this development. And you need to make sure that it benefits the entire community.
Personally, I'm angling for a 24-hour rehearsal studio.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be fun? Just lots of, like, a beehive of little cool rehearsal rooms.
Yeah. No, and you bring
those
up
are cheap.
Facilities. We can't talk about it enough, right? I mean, and it's the biggest thing that we talk to when we talk to community members and even cultural leaders who are looking for a space to do their work.
It's funny because talking about art being the root and getting it right, I remember years ago there was a lot of discussion around providing teens with a teen center, mm-hmm. and guess what? No teens wanted it. And yet, in this focus group, mm-hmm. they've said, we want a place, you know, that we can meet.
They just don't
want to
call it.
Yeah, you just can't be too obvious. You got to make it cool.
You got to be cool.
Yeah, you got to somehow make it grassroots, and they come to it without you saying, this is where you go.
Yeah, and that's
they're allowed to come.
Yeah. Arts and culture done well.
Yeah.
It's attractive.
It is, and it gave me
a lot of
everyone.
Hope for the future. Yeah. These kids were so, when we even talked to them, I was a little worried, honestly. I was like nervous. I was like, I'm getting back into my old self-conscious ways of being in high school, talking to a bunch of high school kids. And I was so impressed with their articulation of what they wanted and their recognition of the value of arts. I mean, it was really quite amazing. It gave me a lot of hope for the future that they even wanted this, and they understood that, you know, this master plan that we were doing. I was like, I wonder if this is going to be a little heady. for these high school students. They were all over it. They were like, nope, make sure that you include us in this, and we agree with all of these strategies that you're putting together. And I was like, wow, I need to talk to high schoolers more. You guys are cool.
Well, I know Mark was on like a focus group for that a while ago, and one of his ideas, and I thought this was a great one because it is just sitting there right now, is put in a bunch of like tiny homes or something and have them be low-cost artist housing or like pop-up galleries or something. And so hopefully someone will get on board and just try to support some great use of that space. It's so vibrant.
Common sentiment from artists is that they don't need much. You give them the space and they will build something. Right. They'll make it beautiful.
Well,
and you see arts districts grow in these kind of urban areas with like these worn down warehouses that are abandoned, and then artists get in there and they make it the coolest thing ever. We don't have the luxury of vacant warehouses in this community. No, maybe a broken down barn out in the county. If anyone listening knows of one, let us know.
How about the Centennial at the top of Main Street? We can do that instead of knocking it down.
Yeah, and actually, I think a community member who is a local artist, I think they visited Las Vegas and also maybe Toronto, and they do this really cool thing where they take old shipping containers and turn them into artist studios, which is, you know, I mean, I don't know if people would want to see shipping containers. I think it could be cool. It's definitely a low-cost option and when you're developing facilities. But, yeah, we get crazy ideas like that all the time. But, again, it's from visiting other communities who are doing it well, who are doing it successfully, and have thriving artists and makers and creative entrepreneurs living there that contribute to their community that makes it a really strong sense of place and amazing place to live.
Two districts that I've been to recently that have, you know, and I know people do this, they get back from their travels and they tell you, Jocelyn.
I love it.
And these two places, I mean, it's the Wynwood in Miami, the murals, and they really revitalized a really rundown area of town. That was so cool. And then in Sebastopol, California, the Barlow District is one that, I just so envision it for our little area there, the 5-acre Bonanza Parcel. Is that the new branding?
I'm not a city employee, but I believe that that's what they call it. And that's okay, right? Because as long as we get the Kimball Arts Center there and perhaps other cultural amenities, we'll be happy, right? Because again, it doesn't have to be that one place does not have to be the district. The district spans quite farther than that one parcel. And I think we lean into that, but still really encourage the city to prioritize arts in that area.
We have just about a minute left. I have a really quick question. When we do the last Friday of the month gallery stroll, is Create PC part of that?
Yes, that's a great question. Create PC is part of the Gallery Association who oversees the gallery stroll activation. This is the last Friday of every month. There's a gallery stroll at 6 to 9 p.m. There is a concentration of art galleries on Main Street, and I think that that's a really cohesive stroll. But there's some really amazing galleries over in kind of the Prospector Bonanza Corridor. Create PC, Kimball Art Center is in the Gallery Association. JG at the Prospect, this is Jude Grenny's new gallery down over in the Prospector area. Prospector Executive Suites. These are all galleries that exist in that corridor. Julie Nestor. So we're always trying to encourage people to, you know, get off the beaten path every once in a while and maybe try a different stroll.
Jocelyn Scudder, Emma Brake, and Andrea Zavala, thank you so much for joining us. Kendall already stepped out. She had another gig.
She's a busy woman.
Thanks to all of you for joining us. This has been really interesting conversation.
We love the arts in Park City. Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life here on KPCW. You can find this episode on kpcw.org under the Shows tab, or on the KPCW app, or wherever you get your podcasts at KPCW The Mountain Life. And if you like today's episode, rate us, subscribe to the show, and share it with your friends.